Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Welcome to the program, and tonight, we'll talk about the playoffs. That's right, 12 games played, 6 more left, 3 positions up for grabs, but really, honestly, there's only one, and that'll be third place in the Eastern Division. Also this week, G. Roy Simon, record-breaking. Yes, that's what he's up and into. Yes, another week down the drain. It's Friday night. Yes, it is. It's Friday night. A great night. Now, Hamilton brought in a brand new quarterback. This weekend, how about that, eh? How about that? We have ourselves a wonderful opportunity to see a lot of great young quarterbacks in a year when expansion is the topic of the day. And expansion to Montreal happened a while ago. Baltimore moved there, didn't they? But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that this year, unlike any other expansion year that's coming up, the team coming in will get a really good chance. Now, when we say really good chance, we're basing it on the fact that the existing teams have a much smaller list of players that they can protect, which, in mathematical terms, should suggest that the Red Blacks of Ottawa should have a great field of players right off the get-go. But I digress, and I always say that tonight is, you know, the night that we talk about the Ticats. That was originally what we were going to do. But, you know, if Ticat fans don't call in, I don't have to do it. But what I can do is persist on promoting the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the team that will be making the playoffs this year in the East. And more than likely, unless Montreal gets Calvillo back and gets an offense back, will be the team that will be playing the Eastern Division winner, which at this point looks safely to say to be the Toronto Argonauts. But we talk Ticats for a moment here and show our respect for the new black.
Black and yellow.
You know what it is.
quarter two, mark the big pen, he returned them all. Kick return, punt return, missed field goal. Arlen Bruce, reception left and right. He's going to catch the ball if it's anywhere in sight. Big style of clutch, SMB, surpass 1,000 yards. Grand Prix, don't forget about Mark Wade, quarter two. One hand, Maurice Mann.
Yeah. You know what it is. Everything I do, yeah, I do it big. Yeah, screaming that's nothing. When I pulled off the line, that's done. Came up from a town, when you see me, you know anything. Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow. I put it down from the whip to my diamonds, I'm in. Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow.
Podcast, defense, man, don't know what to do. Throw it up, take it away, run, we got it too. No pin. Defensive MVP, I'm jockey too. What the hell you gonna do? Easy bag, you gotta stay away. McKean Bradley, turn around and run away. Cole Smith, where the hell you gonna throw? Look back, see you dancing in your end zone.
Yeah, you know what it is. All right,
the yellow
do,
back in
yellow.
Not, they don't stand a chance. Blue Bombers, screw that, man. Alouettes, they think they're big. Coming home with the ring. It's Tiger time, get out the way. Going hard, every day. Fuck the Argos, the Alouettes. It's Tiger Town, we the best.
Y'all already know what it is, man. If you don't, you should by now.
Go, Cats, go.
Yeah, you know what it is. Everything I do, yeah, I do it big. Yeah, screaming that's nothing. When I pull up the line, that's done. Here up in my town.
And black and yellow it is. Black and yellow. The colors of the Tie Cats. The team with Kent Austin at the controls. Dude knows what he's doing. Ex-Argo. Ex-Saskatchewan Rough Rider. Winner of Grey Cups as a player and a coach. Excuse me. I think Hamilton has the makings of a pretty good team. That's right. And I think it's important to suggest that, you know, this show can only work if you phone. And I'm getting tired of waiting for you folks to phone. You know, it gets tiring. I mean, I'm tired of the passengers. The phone number here is 714-242-5250. 714-242-5250. You can also advise your friends that they can text me in Facebook. And I will call you. And let me just look here if there's any activity on Facebook at this time. And it appears there is. So, maybe that's what we'll do next. But first, let's take a look at what I think are some of the top stories. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, the top stories this week. Well, what would you think are the top stories this week? I'll share my opinion with you by starting with this. Here we are down to the home stretch of the playoffs. Of course, this is the dog days of the season where the health of players and the energy levels are not at their peak. They're starting to get worn down a little bit. And about ready to give that last, you know, that finish kick. And right now, before that finish kick, Calgary has already cemented their playoff position. they have one. Toronto and BC can do the same this weekend. And the question really is, who's going to be third in the Eastern Division of the CFL? There are three teams vying for that: Montreal, Winnipeg, and Edmonton in the West. 4-3-2 victories so far this season. Montreal, Edmonton, and Winnipeg, respectively. So this season's going to be very interesting. And knowing that Edmonton is playing in the West may at face value be a disadvantage for them. Whereas with Winnipeg and Montreal, they'll be playing each other a little more, which may not be much of an advantage either, because they'll be eliminating each other while they're at it. So it'll be an interesting stretch in the season. My prediction at the very beginning of the year, and even before the season started, was that Edmonton would start slow but finish well. And in fact, I dare say, I even said that Edmonton would have one of the best records in the last half of the season. Now, seriously, did I actually say that? Yes, I did. Did I actually mean it? I kind of did. I actually did. And I based it simply on the fact that they have specific areas of youth which don't have enough experience. And that makes it harder to learn and to pick up the game and the insights and the intricacies of the game. It just makes it more difficult for a young group to advance if they don't have that in-game experience beside them playing. The coaches can be as wonderful as you'd want them to be, but without that internal leadership, it's a little bit more difficult. Now, will my theory play out, whatever? Don't know for sure. That's what makes sports great. The predictability of sports is to a certain degree predictable, but in a lot of ways it isn't. And I think Edmonton fits in the category of a predictability maybe less available to me. So, but still, I stick with that belief that Edmonton will be one of the better teams in the second half, which means trouble for Montreal and Winnipeg. More so for Winnipeg, because they're already behind, and losing to Edmonton and head-to-head being a tiebreaker is a problem. So there's where it's important. So that's where, you know, points for, points against, I guess, is what it's going to come down to with Winnipeg and Edmonton. But Montreal can eliminate that concern completely by winning at least in lockstep with the other two teams. They have a game up on Edmonton, two games up on Winnipeg, and there's six games left. The margin of error isn't wide, but it isn't narrow either. So hopefully this will be a great series of games to watch. It'll bring up a lot of interest in watching these teams play outside of your favorite team. I know I do and will. I do enjoy watching all the games in the CFL, and this is just another reason to enjoy the games. The playoff hunt. Calgary, BC, Saskatchewan, for all intents and purposes, a lock in the West. Toronto with Hamilton, a slight lock, you know, only because they're only two games ahead of Montreal. But I think that's enough to put them in. So really, it's a three-way race for the final playoff spot, the three-hole in the East: Edmonton, Montreal, and Winnipeg. We'll see how it turns out. It should be awesome. It'll be a great view. This is the Magic Weekend. G. Roy Simon is in Montreal with his Riders, and they're up against the Alouettes. Ben Cahoon, the record holder. One more reception by G. Roy Simon means he will retain the record. That is right. G. Roy Simon, the most receptions in CFL history. Could happen in Ben Cahoon's park. Now, these guys are pretty good-spirited about it. When you consider that Ben Cahoon and Scott Milanovic were in Tampa Bay together in the NFL. Ben Cahoon caught a lot of Scott Milanovic passes, but maybe not enough. Enough at least to keep him in Tampa. And not enough for Scott to remember those days with Ben Cahoon. How's that for irony? So that'll be one of the biggest pieces of news that will take place this weekend. unless the Montreal Alouettes defense can shut out G-Roy Simon. And I think that'll only happen if G-Roy gets hurt around the first quarter. He gets hurt any later, he'll get his reception by then, and the record will be broken. So good luck to G-Roy. Good luck to Montreal. And it'll be an interesting game with a subtext that'll be memorable for all the fans in the stadium and for all CFL fans. A congratulations should be put out there to G-Roy Simon for what he's done or will do, because it's great for all of us, actually, not just the Saskatchewan fans, not the BC fans that he played in front of for so many years, but for all CFL fans. It'll be a great moment, one to remember. G-Roy Simon, future Hall of Famer. The big matchup tonight, which is already underway, is the matchup between two young quarterbacks for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the BC Lions. Those guys would be Max Hall for the Bombers and Thomas DeMarco for BC. Max Hall has, I guess it's safe to say, inherited the starter position. He's been pretty inconsistent in his first couple of games. But that's not to suggest that he doesn't have the talent to do well. He's just going to have to be consistent. Whereas Thomas DeMarco, like many a young quarterback who comes in for the first time this year, has acquitted himself quite well and did a great job in winning and throwing some pretty interesting passes and frustrating all the Saskatchewan fans by virtue of his diminutive stature. Some even suggested, how did he throw over the front lines? Well, he did, and did it well. BC in this game is probably the favorite. But I do believe that Winnipeg has something to prove, and I think they can prove it. And you know what? It's in Winnipeg. So hopefully for Winnipeg, this will be their second victory at home. Of course, we won't know that till the end of the program. Then again, the game should be over before the program's over. The word is out. Rob J. Emery has notified me that G-Roy Simon caught the pass while I was getting ready for the program. And joining me now is my buddy, Aaron.
Hey, Frank, how's it going?
What's with the noise in the background?
Oh, I got Iron Man 3 on.
Do you want to go
back?
Sorry,
I'll turn it down a little bit.
Did you purchase it, or is it the DVD?
Yeah,
the DVD?
I purchased it. How you doing?
Oh, okay, so I won't be ruining your opportunity to watch the movie.
No, no big deal. What we got on tap for tonight, Frank?
Good. Well, we're starting with the CFL, and I mentioned a couple of stories, and G-Roy just broke the record in Montreal.
Yeah, I heard that.
The playoffs, and what are the odds of Edmonton beating out Montreal? I doubt they'll beat out Hamilton. You know, Montreal has two less wins than Hamilton, and I believe those two wins that Montreal has one win more than Edmonton makes three with six left, harder to overcome. But you never know.
You're talking about magic numbers now, and I don't math so well, Frank, but just going on gut instinct, I would actually like to see Edmonton beat out Montreal for that last spot.
It's something that I have mentioned from the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I believed was possible. I actually wasn't sure whether it would be Montreal or Hamilton that would be in trouble, but it became clear, and it is clear now, that Montreal is a team that really has to, you know, start winning some games. They're not able to play the way they've played until now. Well, they have to play more like they played recently, but not the immediate, you know, recently. They've got to win, in other words.
Well, I think the real problem is they're really dependent on one linchpin. And that linchpin happens to be in his 40s.
And
as long as
he's
injured, they're going
to have issues.
Exactly.
He's sitting on the sidelines. Yeah, no, it's a tough situation for Buddy. It is a tough situation for him. You know, Calvillo is a great quarterback, but he is 40. And, you know, the recuperative ability of an older body, we all know, is far slower.
Yeah, you don't spring back quite as quickly, do you?
right? We all know that personally, right?
Yep. Well, so, I mean, I'm not quite there yet. I'm a couple years behind Anthony, but I know the feeling.
No, but you know what I'm referring to. The older you get, the less you're able to recover from quickly.
Exactly.
And in some cases, the less you are able to recover. So, you know, that's something to think about in a year when a lot of young quarterbacks are out there. I mean, the CFL is notorious for quarterbacks changing uniforms. And this year there have been a lot of quarterbacks in uniforms that are very young, in the mid-20s age group, that could very well next year be wearing different uniforms and be important factors on their team.
No, this is definitely true. And you know what? As much as people may complain about the lack of talent at that particular position, the CFL never seems to lack for good pivots.
Yes, yes. Well, you know what? This year, more than any other year, they've been prevalently effective. Very effective, in fact.
Yeah,
the young quarterbacks,
the
young quarterbacks have been called into play. And, you know, admittedly, in Winnipeg, they brought out some young quarterbacks. They haven't had as much success in Winnipeg, but I think that's more to do with the teams. I think this year what we've seen good teams lose quarterbacks and are able to recover or to keep going, like Calgary, Toronto, BC, not Montreal, you know, not Winnipeg. Edmonton, in fact, you know, because we forget that Riley wasn't the number one quarterback coming into the season.
No, he most definitely wasn't. He was a little bit further down their depth charts, if memory serves.
So, you
and
know,
a little bit is being generous.
And I also tonight you ask what else we'll be doing. Well, for the first hour, we'll do some CFL stuff, so about an hour, depending on how helpful the listeners are tonight. But then we're going to switch over to something that I'm going to call the new age. Coming upon a new age? And we've touched on this subject. Is the world finally tired of war and, realizing the bluffs are no longer there? Where we all know, I think it's common knowledge, that war costs money and jobs. And unhappy people are usually people who don't have jobs.
Generally speaking, I'll agree with that.
Generally speaking, they'll be unhappy if they don't have a job. So mm-hmm. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting the what has gone on. We can talk about that. And I read a prose from a guy that was known for his humor, Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, yeah.
Who was also known not to speak very much, at least in the media, because his media did not have voice attached to the film. And then he did speak, and he did do The Little Dictator, and there's a recitation by the baker, and it's one that I wanted to read, and I will read later in the program, and try to stoke a conversation between you and I and whomever else wants to chime in. So that's what we got coming in the second half of the program. This is Free for All Friday, or as my wife likes to call it, blah, blah, blah. Welcome to Friday, WTF. Welcome to Friday. She got that idea from us doing that WTF show. Remember we did that WTF
yeah.
show? Okay. We can probably, you know what? I think we haven't done a WTF show in a while. We should maybe do another one. So maybe
That'll
in that second half we'll do more. There might be some WTFs there. I got a couple that are jumping to my head right now, and they involve the same people we were talking about the last time we did WTF. But and you know what I'm saying, I think. You're smart enough to know what I'm talking about. But anyway,
yes,
let's
sir.
Go back to the CFL. And
right.
we have a new guy. I want you to welcome a new guy. His name is Mr. Emery, Rob J. Emery. You may or may not have met him already. I know the listeners who listen have met him. He has some stuff to say. I'm going to introduce him by saying that he was originally, and we're soft-pedaling this part, a water boy, but then became an assistant equipment manager. So, you know, he worked his way up to up the chain, and I believe it was in Hamilton, and he can tell us the rest. Rob, welcome to the program.
Thanks, buddy. How are you?
Very good. Did you hear anything that I said till now?
Well, I was sitting there and I was thinking about, you guys were talking about how old the quarterback is in this and that. Well, I was just thinking back to Damon Allen. He retired at what, 49?
No, no way.
Yeah, I
no
thought
way.
He was like 49
no.
when he retired.
You know what? I talked to him a couple of weeks ago. I should have asked him. You know what? I tell you what, Rob. On Fridays, my buddy is Aaron, and Aaron is one of those guys that in a couple of minutes you'll hear his keyboard go crazy, and he's going to tell us at what age Damon Allen retired.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I can like make this a lot easier. I can call three way. I can call Stephon Jones and ask him. Because he played in the CFL for Edmonton, Saskatchewan, Ottawa, and that was it.
Well, you know what? Why don't you call Stephon Jones, and we'll talk to him. We can do a three-way.
Okay,
honey,
well,
is it okay if
on.
I do a three-way?
My
wife says it's okay.
On.
I can do a three-way.
Hold
We're talking
on.
About Stephon Jones, right?
Yeah, Stephon Jones played for Edmonton, Saskatchewan, and Ottawa.
I'd be glad to talk to him. How do you, Aaron? You good with that?
Yeah, no, I'm great with that. I'm just looking at the statistics here. I'm showing that Damon actually retired in 2007, which was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
He just turned 50 this year, which means he would have retired at 44.
44.
Yeah.
That's old.
Oh.
That's still very old, buddy. That's still old.
Well,
it doesn't
is.
Take away
it
from.
Well,
I mean,
look at the quarterbacks now. Like, Kolaris is what, in his 20s?
Well, Ricky Ray's into his 30s.
Yeah.
Calvillo's 40.
Henry Burris is
35, 34.
Okay.
Right?
But
yeah, I mean, Kolaris right now is 25.
Yeah.
So he's one of the younger ones.
He's one of the new age guys.
Yeah. You know, I hope Ottawa gets him, you know, next season or something
Hold on a second now. Cool your jets there, buddy.
Well,
he's staying in Toronto. He likes it here.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, Ottawa needs – the Red Blacks need an awesome team.
I think the Red Blacks need to get Riley. I think that's your mic. I think that's your mic, Aaron. The Red Blacks need to get Riley out of Edmonton.
No, they definitely do. If they want a decent option quarterback, they are going to have to try to steal him from Edmonton.
Yeah, but you know what? Riley's doing pretty good, and it's making my boy Kavis look pretty good. You know, Kavis
yes.
Reed is the head coach out
yes.
there. I do believe this is Kavis's first year as a head coach in Edmonton.
Yes.
First year, right, as a head coach.
Yeah.
And, you
sure.
know, he's actually doing pretty good. You know, like when I was out in Hamilton in 2006, Kavis was the defensive coordinator, you know. And then all of a sudden, boom, he becomes the head coach in 2012-13 as a head coach for Edmonton. I'm like, damn. I'm like, that's pretty good, bro. You know?
It is very good. And he's had to overcome the brain cramp that the GM had.
Yeah.
You know?
Brain cramp is putting a polite face on it, don't you think, Frank?
Well... You know, I'm trying to be fair here. I mean, this is all about a guy, a GM that wants to win badly. And between you and I, guys, I think he lost his temper because he knew that the key to his team's success was Riley. And if the offensive line didn't protect him, the kid would be knocked out. You know,
He
knows just like the Argos when they got Ray. They made a change. They decided they needed to protect him. That is why they gave up on a great running back that was leading the league and put in Chad Kackert.
Okay.
Right? That's why they did it. And that's what this GM, only thing is, this GM went public. He shouldn't have done that. And Kavis Reed has been forced to hold the team together.
So, Aaron, can I ask you a question, my friend?
Sure.
You're like a CFL dictionary kind of thingamajig?
No, not in the slightest. I'm more of a lacrosse fan than I am a CFL fan. I'm just really, really quick with the Google foo.
Okay. Because I was reading a few posts on Facebook A buddy of mine, Craig Smith, who's the director of something for Saskatchewan,
mm-hmm.
and he was sitting down watching the game with Nick Volpe, and I said, Volpe, I said, why does that name ring a bell? And
Hamilton.
I'm like, no, he was, there was John Volpe was a running back for BC, I believe, in the 90s.
Okay.
I just want to see if that was if that's correct, though.
So we're looking for Nick, or are we looking for John?
John Volpe.
John Volpe.
I believe he was number 22 for BC, a running back.
Oh, that's a really good question, because the Volpe that I'm getting here is a governor of Massachusetts. That's not going to work.
Nope.
And the Nick is with the Argos. Played for the 52 team. Won a great cup with the Argos.
Yeah. Well, that's
now Volpe's currently 45. He played in the CFL in 91 and 92.
Yeah, and he
was the most outstanding rookie. He played with the BC Lions and then ended his career in 94 with the Las Vegas Posse.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay. And who was the other guy, Rick?
Rick.
Now, who is the other Volpe you were talking about?
Oh, it was Nick Volpe.
Nick, he's with the Argos. He's vice president.
Vice president of the Argos or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a running back also, I believe. But no, because I like when Craig Smith put that up on Facebook, I was like, hey, I'm like, is that John Volpe's father or something? And Craig Smith was kind of like, no. I'm like, oh, okay. Try to ask a question there and see what's
up. Nope, no worries. Sorry about that.
No problem.
All right. Have we researched ourselves to death now? Or are we done researching?
I believe so.
Okay, good. Let's move on to opinions. So this weekend, Rob.
Yes.
This weekend. Now we know that G. Roy Simon broke the record.
No. When did he break the record?
First pass, or you? That was your suggestion.
No, that was just that was just telling you the first pass of the game is going to be a pass to G. Roy.
Oh, okay.
It hasn't happened yet. I noticed that, like on Facebook, on the thing, you were like, "Oh, it already happened." I'm like, it "Hasn't happened yet." I'm like,
"Okay, good.
I'm like,
good.
When
I misunderstood you. I misunderstood you. The game tonight is between Winnipeg
and BC."
And BC, right? Not. It's Winnipeg and BC tonight.
Yeah, Montreal.
Somehow you convinced me that the Montreal game was tonight.
No.
Now that I'm thinking about it, that's good. Great short-term memory for Frank. But
but what I'm saying is the first pass of the Montreal game is going to be to G. Roy, so he can break the record and boom. But see, G. Roy's not even worried about the record right now. You know, he's worried about winning the game. You know, because Saskatchewan's on, what, a three or four game losing streak?
Yeah, and a well-earned losing streak.
Yeah, true. But, you know, he's more focused on winning the games. He don't give two shits about what records he breaks or whatever. Excuse my language, I didn't mean to throw that in there. But, you know,
I think you're right, he might not give two, but he'll at least give one.
Well, yeah, like, you know, it would be, you know, if I was in his shoes and it was like, yeah, my name's going to be in the Hall of Fame, my name's going to be here, well, I'm going to go for it, right? But, you know,
100%,
that's not,
100%.
Oh, there's,
so
oh,
you believe he'll do it in the first pass.
I'm saying that for
him to do it, he's going to have to do it before the end of the first quarter, and it'll be, if he doesn't do it, it'll be because he got hurt. You know,
yeah.
I can't see him not making a catch. You know, if he doesn't,
you know what's gonna happen that game. You know, they better get the record book ready and out and put his name in there because it's gonna happen.
All right, now
that's what
the next subject I touched on, and Aaron and I had a chance to discuss it. And anybody that wants to chime in, they can call 714-242-5250. That's an L.A. number. If you don't want to call L.A., You can use Google Talk or any other computer phone application. And if you don't have that, you can always message me on Facebook and put in your phone number like Rob did, and I'll call you, and then you won't have to call LA, and you won't have to suffer the long distance cost.
Yeah.
So the phone number here again, 714-242-5250, and all you have to do is Candid Frank Live. Once you type that in Facebook, it'll pretty much come up. And then my last name is Stanishi, and if it looks like it has a horn, that's my page. If somewhere there's a horn, it's my page. Now, as far as making the playoffs this year, we've got the third slot, I believe, is still up for grabs in the East. I believe the three spots in the West are pretty much spoken for. So assuming that, Rob, the three teams that may win that third spot are Montreal, Winnipeg, or Edmonton? Would it be simple to say that Winnipeg's going to have to win early, very soon, or they could be out of the race, and it'll be a two-horse race, Montreal and Edmonton?
Well, in my books, I don't know if I'm crazy or not, but in my books, watching this game, BC and Winnipeg, it's 47-14 for BC. I think Winnipeg's going to be golfing anytime soon, so I think Montreal and Edmonton will be going for a fight. You don't even have to consider Winnipeg because they got absolutely nothing. You know, nothing at all.
That's too bad. That is too bad for the Edmonton
fans.
I hate
saying that to Winnipeg people and all that, but you know what? They got absolutely nothing. Winnipeg is done.
Well, there you go. It's too bad about that, let me tell you.
Yeah.
So that was two. And the third thing I was talking about was young quarterbacks. Now, am I to assume that DeMarco is the one scoring all those points for BC?
Oh, yeah. Well, for some reason, they got Buck Pearson there now. I find that weird because DeMarco is an amazing quarterback. He's throwing touchdowns left and right. Why do you have to bring Buck Pierce in? Like, come on. Like, is Buck Pierce talking to the coach saying, hey, let me go in, coach. Come on. This quarterback is really good. He's like an upstart coming quarterback. Let me go in. You know, it's like, come on.
Well, you know what? Rob? I think maybe one has to look at the bigger picture. And you're already without your top quarterback. Your number two that knows the playbook is out there. The game is well in hand, right? The game is well in hand. Buck Pierce. I don't know whether he knows the BC playbook that well. If he does or if he doesn't, it really doesn't matter. With the team having the game well in hand, they're giving him an opportunity to loosen up, if you will. Because he may be called into action if DeMarco gets hurt. And if they leave DeMarco in there, there's a good chance that he will get hurt. You're trying to protect an asset, I think. And it's, I'm not going to call it a clever move. I'm not going to call it a gutsy move. I'm not going to call it even a move they should make. Because every quarterback likes to finish the game. But it is an option. You know, they want to protect. In my mind, it's because two things they want to accomplish. They want to get Buck Pierce some reps some live reps in the game for the team to bring them into the team, if you will, and they want to protect DeMarco.
True.
Aaron, you got an opinion on that?
I sadly, Frank, I'm not familiar enough with the situation to actually have a take on it. I'm gonna have to defer to Rob and you on this one.
Okay, so Rob, what do you think?
Well, You might want to throw this Buck Pierce guy in just to get, like you were saying, to give him some reps. You know, like it's kind of boring sitting on the sidelines. As I know, for the past 5 years, on the sidelines doing absolutely nothing, but, not doing much. It's really boring when you're sitting on the sidelines doing nothing, just watching the game. And, if I put myself in Buck Pierce's shoes, it would be pretty boring just standing there watching the game when you're all dressed up and nowhere to go. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know,
I believe
and
that.
That's why I feel bad for third string quarterbacks, because they're just, you know, they have the playbook in their hands and they're just writing the plays down, calling the play, doing this, doing that. It's boring. You know, it's really boring to be a third string quarterback and just standing there writing things down on a paper.
And I agree. All right, we're gonna take a short break. We'll be back for more. And when we come back, we're gonna spend a little more time talking about the Ticats. The Ticats 2 weeks ago lost to Calgary. They're looking for revenge, no doubt about it. Ellingson, we'll talk about Ellingson, who's really awesome to watch in the games that I've watched Hamilton play, and I think I've watched almost every game the Ticats have played this year. And in every game, Ellingson, it seems to me, has made an incredible catch.
He has?
We'll be back after this.
Well, now, are you sure there's any fish in here at all? Because we haven't latched into one today yet.
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be offensive. Be radical. The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the attitude.
Go, go, go. Woo!
Be offensive. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
You have a little popcorn?
I see a few pockets of people that ain't acting crazy. Because I'm here live.
Candid Frank Live.
About half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill are doing your thing. Are y'all ready to get live or what?
Candid Frank Live.
We gonna set this off right or what? It's Friday night. We'll see. I'm the cream of the crop. I rise to the top. Get ready to pick.
There's an unwritten code in Hamilton. If you live by it, chances are you've replaced the last beer in a cooler. You don't talk during the national anthem. You believe that great things can come from a little room above a fruit stand. You know Mac is a university, not a computer. Your child's first words were Oski Wee Wee. You know a red hat looks good with black and gold, and understand that double blue only looks good on the police. You believe hot water isn't a necessity for the visitor's dressing room. You've hit every green light on Main Street twice. You believe there's a little general in all of us. You only wear your good hard hat to games. You know King Kong was more than an ape, he was a five-time All-Star. You've parked on somebody's lawn to catch a kickoff. You know that Porter is a quarterback, not a bellhop. You've worn a kilt to a football game. You understand that every once in a while you have to be the center. You believe a football team can outlast 22 prime ministers, 2 world wars, a great depression, and still give birth to a pearl. You've worn a garbage bag as a raincoat. You've never seen a fair catch. You pick a concession line not based on how long the line is, but how hot that cashier looks. You understand that Labor Day is more than an extra day off. And no matter what happens on the field, your season is a success if you beat the Argos.
All right. Now, as an Argo fan, and I'm trying to be objective here, I'm objectifying as best as I can. And I object. No. This week, the Hamilton Tiger Cats are looking to, as Torrey Davis says, exact revenge for the last-minute touchdown loss to the Calgary Stampeders 2 weeks ago. Now, they'll have in the lineup, get this. Any of you remember Steve Tasker, NFL great? Well, his son's going to be playing for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. His name is Luke Tasker. He's a receiver, and I'll tell you, Kent Austin is doing a marvelous job with this team. And for those of you that think that the Hamilton Tiger Cats being 6-6 is not a very good showing, in my opinion, what I expected, I didn't expect them to be 500 till the end of the year. I believe now they can be a plus 500 team for sure. There's still hope for them to supplant the Argonauts, you know, as the first place team with the bye in the playoffs in the Eastern Division. They still got plenty of time for that. Yes, the Argos are 8-4, but that's only a 2-game lead with 6 games left. And depending on what happens in the back-and-back games against Hamilton, Hamilton may only need to win 2 more games than Toronto before the end of the season. And that could get them first place by virtue of the tiebreaker, which is the head-to-head. And they'll have played, I guess, 3 head-to-head games. Toronto won the first one. And 2 of them are coming in the next October 4th and October 11th, I believe. They'll be playing Hamilton first here in Toronto and then in Hamilton. And we'll be going to that game on Thanksgiving weekend. It's a Sunday or Monday? It's a Monday? Yeah, it's a Monday. Okay, thank you. That game's a Monday. We'll be going to that game. Now, the Hamilton Tiger Cats have an exceptional player. And we'll bring the guys back in to give their opinion on the subject that I've just raised. Greg Ellingson. Every game I've watched, this kid has been outstanding. The Ticats have one of the better receivers to come out for a while. You know, he sits very high in the ratings on receptions, very close to the top as a rookie. This is a guy who doesn't just make catches; he makes spectacular catches. I have seen some catches he's made, and they've just blown my mind. Totally blown my mind. Okay, boys. First of all, I guess, Rob, tell me a little bit about we talk about Hamilton, and is this team in your mind better today than you thought they would be at this point? At 12 games, did
actually yes, because. They got well this year. They finally got Henry Burst. They got a good quarterback. And I'm not saying Jason Moss was not a good quarterback or anything. Jason Moss was a good quarterback, but Henry Burst is a stable quarterback who likes to throw, likes to run, likes to do whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jason Moss liked to throw. Yeah, but.
Is it just Burris? Why didn't Burris do this last year with Hamilton, and why is it different this year?
I don't know.
You don't think the coach has anything to do with it?
What do you mean by that?
Kent Austin, you know,
yeah.
Does he deserve any credit for the fact that the Hamilton team is 6-6 after 12 games?
Yeah, he does. He deserves a lot. You know, it's always nice to have a veteran CFL player from back in the day to be your head coach, right? especially with Ken Austin, who was an all-star for Saskatchewan and a few other teams, I believe.
Yep, Toronto as well.
Yeah, Toronto, Saskatchewan. You know, he was a great quarterback. So what he can do... is, open up his own playbook that he used to do when he was the all-star quarterback and say, okay, Henry, here, let's do this. Do it this way, do it that way, do it this way, and boom, 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 you know? And then you see Henry Burst doing it this way and that way and this way and that way, and then it's all good, you know?
Okay. Aaron, do you want to pipe in on this one?
No, I'm good, Frank.
All right. Now,
I'll be honest with you. When it comes to a lot of the CFL stuff, I am a little bit at sea. I can pipe in here or there, but this is just something that's just a little bit outside my bailiwick for now.
Okay, well, we usually Fridays is Feline Fridays, and we try to talk a bit about the Tie Cats. So I'll take advantage of the fact that you're here, Rob. How impressed are you with the running back Gable, this human highlight film?
C.J. Gable, he's actually a good little running back. You know, I picked him for my Facebook CFL pool, and you know, I picked him at first, and then he wasn't running nothing. You know, then I see him like play a game or whatever, and it's like C.J. Gable with the ball runs for 10 yards. C.J. with the ball 5 yards, and so I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna re-pick him onto my CFL pool. You know. So, he's actually pretty good.
He's, you know, very he's, good. And
he's got 79 attempts.
Yep, 437 yards.
37 yards, and his average is 5.5 yards. And, you know, he's got
Andy can catch. Andy's catching.
And he can catch, yes. He's got 36.
We're almost identical,
catches.
Yeah. Almost for identical yards.
Identical yards, yeah. And, you know, like in rushing, his longest was 26 yards. And in receiving, his longest was 42. And I was like, oh, my God. But see, I'm looking at his stats right here right now. But his punt returns, his longest was 11 yards. I'm like, wow.
Well, you know.
11 yards on the punt return.
Well, you know, returning punts is there's an art factor, you know, a different set of skills, and I think C.J. Gable, what he does is he's an entertaining running back, that's for sure. This kid is very flexible, you know, he bounces around like a beach ball, you know, hit him and he acts like a beach ball. You can't, you know, it's almost like you can't keep him down, you know. And he's been very, very impressive. I've been very impressed with this kid. Hamilton has a great running game, a great passing game. You know, Fantuz, an experienced receiver, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've got a great backup quarterback in Lefevre. And then they brought in another young quarterback, which, you know, the new number three quarterback. Out of Dallas, out of Texas, and they're starting to really have a great team. Their weaknesses right now, I don't even know at this point if they have any glaring weaknesses. Do you see any?
No. Not
is the
at
defense
all.
Is the defense good enough to win the East?
They could be. They could be. Yeah. You know, the defense is pretty good, you know. I think the defense would be a good thing, you know.
So are they a team that they're not really sack happy?
No.
They
have what? They have what? 23 quarterback sacks, and they're last in the CFL.
And what about INTs, interceptions?
Interceptions.
Yeah, where are they in interceptions?
Let me.
I'm gonna look too. I'm looking as well,
looking
and I'm getting it now. I got it here.
Stats.
We'll bring it up. The interceptions are not. They're not really impressive in that area either.
No.
Right?
I'm just looking at it right here right now.
But
didn't Tisdale, didn't he play for Hamilton?
Mm-hmm.
Tisdale played for Hamilton, no?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
So basically, they're special teams. We discussed already that, you know, punt returns, they're not doing so well on punt returns, at least. Not with Gable.
Yeah.
The other guys, well, average 8. Yeah, you know what? That's probably where Austin. I'm not saying that they're weak on their specialty teams or their defense, But let's just say that their offense and, you know, again, is a great offense. But I don't think the defense is as porous as it was last year, that's for sure. You know, they plugged up some important holes. So, you know, and we all know that, you know, if you look at the Argos right now, the Argos were going through that winning streak without their kicker, you know, without their regular kicker. So, you know, and without their regular, you know, kick returner, right?
Yeah.
And they were still winning. So needless to say, those two weaknesses aren't ones that'll hold back a team from winning, and because it didn't for Toronto and it shouldn't for Hamilton. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this home stretch, these last six games. So if we do the math, the last third of the season. So, you know, whatever you've done in the first two thirds, you can undo a lot of it in the last third. But you really can't be too far behind the eight ball as of today. For example, like Winnipeg. You know, Hamilton is at even 6-6, which just means that you know, they're hanging pretty safe for a playoff spot. They you know, first is within reach, and unfortunately, so is not making the playoffs. So you know, between the Argos, Saskatchewan, Calgary, and BC, those four teams are pretty much a lock for the playoffs. BC looks to have locked in their playoff position tonight, all things going in the direction they've been going, right? And Toronto, if they can beat Edmonton, will be a lock for the playoffs as well, as, and to put it simply, will be in the playoffs by virtue of, you know, enough wins, and no other team will be able to catch them. So it's going to be an interesting final third of the playoffs.
Yeah, okay.
So in conclusion, for our CFL portion of the show, we've got about 3 minutes left, two minutes left, whatever. Is there anything you'd like to bring up? Ellingson, you know, for Hamilton.
I was just writing his name down, something to talk about. When I heard that name on the Hamilton roster, I was talking with Stefan Jones, and I said, Ellingson. I said, he's not related to Duke, is he? Because if you remember, we had a James Duke Ellingson here in Ottawa, number 85. And I thought maybe they were related or something, like it was Duke's son or something, you know. And Steptoe, like Stefan Jones, was like, no, I don't think they're related at all. And I'm like, that's weird. Just
but he's done, done a great job, hasn't he?
Oh, he's done an amazing job. I still remember the first game he made, I think it was like three or four catches for numerous of yards, and I was like, oh my God, I'm like, this quarterback's actually pretty good, you know? This wide receiver's pretty good, you know?
Do you think he's got a shot for Rookie of the Year?
Oh yeah, definitely. If he keeps up the way he's going right now, why not?
All right.
You know? And another one I was thinking about is Delahunt for Hamilton. He's actually pretty good, eh?
Mm-hmm.
He was actually he's a former Ottawa Sooner, and he was with the Sooners when I was the equipment manager for them. And he's actually a very nice guy. John Delahunt there.
What makes him a good player? Other than a nice guy, what makes him a good player?
He knows how to move. He knows, you know, like as an old line, he's sitting there and he's got eyes like on both sides that see everything going around. And it's just like, oh my God. You know, like when I first heard his name playing for the Ticats, I was like, oh my God. I'm like, John Delahunt? I'm like, no way. I'm like, he played, I think it was Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he played Penn State. And it was like, then and like over at the Sooner Clubhouse and all that, they were all like, oh yeah, Delahunt's playing for Ticats. So I'm like, no way. I'm like, yeah, that's my boy. You know? And it's good because, like, there's been a few, there was Derek Armstrong played for Calgary as an O lineman. He was an Ottawa Sooner when I was there. So it's nice as an equipment manager of a junior football team to see these players move on and move up.
What,
you know
what makes? Yeah. So basically, his ability, his peripheral vision is his strength. That's what you're telling me?
Who's this, Dillahunt?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does he have any other qualities that would make him such a good player?
Well, his size and everything, yeah. He's a slot back, right?
Right.
So like, he has the speed. He has quick speed to move around, right?
I gotcha.
You
so
know,
and I guess in your opinion, if you had to pick between Ottawa as the team that you'll root for and the Hamilton Tiger Cats, which direction would you go?
Why do you ask me these questions? No.
Well, I didn't just ask you that question because I think it's an important question.
Yeah, it is. It is. Can I cheer for both teams?
All right. In that case, then, in honor of your ability to cheer for both teams, I'm going to play a little thing about the Ottawa Red Blacks, and we'll
okay.
call it a night for the CFL. And thank you so much for being on the program, Rob.
All right. Thanks a lot, buddy. Take
My
care.
Pleasure. You too. Okay.
Bye.
When we come back, we'll come back with – oh, wrong. I closed off the wrong person. Oopsies. Sorry, Aaron. Well, I'll call Aaron while we go for this short break and bring him back.
It is a first down for Ottawa. The football at the 24 of Saskatchewan. Clements coming back to throw again. Looking, gets all kinds of protection. Throws into the end zone for Gabriel. Touchdown!
In 1898, the Ottawa Football Club adopted the red and black of the Canadians that fought with Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War. They also adopted the name. Et c'est à partir de ces débuts modestes que le rouge et noir a été associé à la ville d'Ottawa. The Carleton Ravens, Ottawa Fury FC, Ottawa 67s, and the Ottawa Senators have all adopted the colors and built their own history and traditions. Mais le rouge et noir se retrouve d'abord sur les chandails des équipes d'Ottawa dans la LCF. Des couleurs de Russ Jackson et de Tony Gabriel. To all who have worn the red and black. À tous ceux qui ont porté le rouge et noir, who have battled on the gridiron on behalf of our great city et qui se sont battus sur le terrain au nom de notre belle ville. We honor your tradition. Nous préservons votre tradition as we begin to forge our own. Et nous commençons à forger la nôtre. Like the blades that cut timber in the upper Ottawa Valley and the men who rode them down the Ottawa River past the locks of Bytown. We are balanced, dangerous, unstoppable. Nous sommes les Rouges et Noirs d'Ottawa. We are... the Ottawa Red Blacks.
Glad to be back, Frank.
I hung up on you by accident. Sorry, buddy.
It's all good. It happens.
All right. So now I promised that I'd be – now, and I got to remember where I put it. Oh, jeepers. Well, hey, listen. Why don't you tell me? It should be right here. Why don't you tell me what you think are some of the stories of the week, and we'll see what I do with it now.
Now, are we talking sports wise, or are we talking?
No. We're back to we're now moving on to. the part of the show that we know and love, which is talking outside of sports, unless it fits into the regular portion of life. For example, WTF. I said maybe we'll get back. Here it is. I got it. Here. This is going to take a few minutes, but I decided to do this oratory, one that, as I said, Jeepers Creepers, Charlie Chaplin wrote. Thank you. And it's about almost 4 minutes. Here it is. And if you folks can stand to listen to it, this is what it sounds like. And I wanted to give my chance to do it my way. So it sounds like a Frank Sinatra song. I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone, if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white man. After all, we all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone. The good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned our souls, has barricaded the world with hate, and has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Technology that gives us abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical. Our cleverness, hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than technology, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the internet have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for the universal brotherhood, for unity for us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes some among us torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes, men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, or what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men with machine minds and machine hearts. You're not machines. You're not cattle. You're men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery. Fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke, it is written, "The kingdom of God is within man." Not one man nor a group of men, but in all men. In you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us all fight for a new world, a decent world that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth the future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill their promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason, a world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite. Now, that was written in prior to 1940, was broadcast in 1940 by Charlie Chaplin. And it sounds still viable and still makes sense today. I don't know. What do you think, Aaron? You still there, Aaron? If I hear snoring, I'm going to have a
nope.
I don't.
Not this time, Frank.
I'm not hearing snoring. Okay, good. I catch you at a bad time.
I didn't hear you coming off mute.
I told you it was about 4 minutes, but that's okay. Did you hear what was said?
Yes, I did hear what was said.
Okay. Do you think it's still relevant today, knowing that it was written by Charlie Chaplin prior to 1940? That's prior to
World War. Some writings, Frank, that are genuinely universal, and Charlie Chaplin is definitely one of those authors.
What other writings come to mind in your mind that have that kind of, you know, I think of Animal Farm as a book that is relevant today and relevant forever, because, you know, absolute power, you know, power is absolute and absolute power corrupts.
Well, there's that. There's Mark Twain. There's anything by Edgar Rice Burroughs. You want to go a little bit further back than that, you can always go back to the writings of Sun Tzu and The Art of War. These are writings that will always be relevant, no matter what the situation.
I say this, we're going to go into WTF mode.
All right.
What makes you say WTF? And we're not saying, welcome to Friday. We're saying, what the fuck? Like, what makes you say, what the fuck? Oh, please. My wife's getting upset because I'm using foul language.
The eye rolls. They're back.
There's a teacher at U of T. All right?
Yep.
And did you hear what he said and what he's trying to sell as okay?
I did not.
No? Get your Google on. And
okay.
It's Gilmore. I forget his first name. Is it? Not David Gilmour, because that's Pink Floyd. I don't remember his first name. Do you remember his first name? Huh? Jeff? No, I don't think so. No, I don't think it's Jeff. But anyway, he's a teacher at U of T.
Yeah.
And he was doing it some internet blog magazine, and he was quoted as saying, and I'm only paraphrasing, where he doesn't find women and Chinese people as interesting authors. So he only teaches, white men. Now, the inference was that he only thought white men could write. But he is saying, no, that's not what he meant. He just meant he likes to teach what he loves, and what he loves are white men that write. And he doesn't see what's wrong with him saying that. And the part that I don't think the disconnect that he has, in my opinion, is not as a person. As a person, we're all entitled to enjoy and appreciate what we want, right? I mean, we all, we all find ways to relate with different things in life.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I have with him is that he's a teacher, and his biases, if he's a teacher, I would hope that the school, and the school did say they didn't agree with what he said, I hope the school doesn't have a policy that follows along the lines of what he's saying, is that the only authors that can be taught or spoken about, are white guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the part that bothers me. It's not that he prefers white authors. There has to be an inclusionary attitude when it comes to education, and you can't. I don't think it's right if he has sole control of that department. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I hear you definitely on that one. I mean, it's a definite indication of bias if he only likes to teach white guys.
Yeah, it just seems a little strange. And so when I heard that, I said WTF to myself, because I got to hear what this guy's saying. And then he said what he had to say, and it still didn't salvage anything of what he was doing to me. It still felt it still felt wrong. I don't know why. Maybe because I'm a son of immigrants, and maybe I've seen prejudice and bias, you know, in my life. So I don't get it. You know, I don't get the idea that that you could like only a certain group of people. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. The writings of Chinese artists and the writings of black people may not necessarily turn his crank, because it may not necessarily be anything he really cares about.
So then, is it not the obligation of the school, because his bias shouldn't be the school's bias by association?
No, I hear you on that. The problem is I don't think it's necessarily the school that completely designs the syllabus. I mean, it's done with input from the author, or sorry, from the teachers. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you.
So I mean, if he's going to design a course around white authors, then that's fine. I mean, I've heard of crazier courses offered by universities, specifically Klingon. So, you know, I mean, like, if you want to get that sort of crazy, then yeah, you can do that sort of thing. But I mean, as far as his bias, I mean, if it's only a elective course that's offered and it's not a mandatory course, then you know, I have no issue with him teaching that.
So basically, what they're reporting is there are a few critics of David and his name is David Gilmore's comments about teaching only serious heterosexual guys. It was published in Hazlitt on Wednesday, and this is where this, you know, kerfuffle is finding its roots.
Yeah. No, I mean, it definitely strikes me as a little bit off, especially in the quote-unquote post-racial and enlightened society. You know,
yes,
that he would only teach such a narrow cross-section of literature. But, again, we're not the ones that design the syllabus. We're not the ones that have the input into that sort of thing. So,
well, you know, he's like, hopefully he's like part of a salad. Do you know what I mean? And the part that he does, there are other, you know, contributions to that salad, not necessarily just, you know, leaf lettuce, if you know what I mean, right? So
yeah,
that's the hope. So
the iceberg is kind of boring
if it's all by itself. A little onion goes well, tomato, you know. So, and now one of Gilmore's fellow English instructors at U of T has come out swinging against the author, asserting emphatically that David Gilmore is not a professor of literature. And more scathingly, that he, referring, of course, to David Gilmore by this person, doesn't seem to grasp why anyone should read literature at all. And the author of this prose, if you will, is Holger Syme, Associate Professor of English and Chair of the Department of English and Drama at the University of Toronto's Mississauga campus. So he was
Actually,
he was
you know,
criticized.
I thought you were referring to Antelio, who also wrote an open letter to David.
Did and you know, and they make reference to Chekhov, you know, who isn't, you know, your white heterosexual, you know, another great writer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I see your point, and I understand it. Gilmore claims that the university supports him and backs him, and it sounds about right. But also the fact remains that the university has distanced themselves from this guy. And I don't know that they should or shouldn't. I don't have an opinion on that. I just would like to think that as an inclusive person, that this guy's way of thinking isn't the only way of thinking in the halls of that, you know, hallowed educational place known as U of T, right? And so that's all I care about. So as long as that's the case, you with your Chinese background, me with my Italian background, don't feel slighted by, you know, a reference that almost suggests at face value, and not factually really, because we don't know factually, but at face value seems to discriminate against people like us.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I mean, if that's what he wants to teach, and he's the one who's designed the course, then hey, more power to him. I can just choose not to take it.
There you go.
So
there
you
go.
Know, I mean, there's a myriad of choices when it comes to University of Toronto English courses. I should
there
know
you go.
5 years there. So, you know, if you know, the fact that he's only teaching straight white dudes in his syllabus doesn't appeal to me, I'm just not going to choose that.
There you go.
You know. I mean, and by the same token, Frank, and this was just mentioned to me by somebody who's got a little bit of insight into these sorts of things, there are women's studies that only teach straight women authors, and there's other courses that only teach that only teach lesbian women authors.
Perfect.
You don't see that.
But
sort
that's
of
what.
Race.
No, but that's what. But that's what I'm assuming is the case.
Yeah.
Rather than you know, strap him to a gauntlet. You know what I mean? Like or to a crucifix. I'm not here to hang him or, you know, give him his length of rope. That's not what I'm here to do. That's all I want to make sure of. But it does highlight the fact that people can run away half cocked because they hear only about the iceberg lettuce, you know, when there's other ingredients to that salad.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that everybody's jumping on this guy because he only wants to teach hetero authors when there are. I mean, like, I was taking a course at the University of Toronto, and the instructor straight out and told us said, yeah, if you're looking to find any male authors in this course, then you're greatly mistaken because I won't teach them.
Yes.
You know, and it was a general literature course, so. However the professor wants to design their syllabus is however they want to design it for that particular class. If they don't want to teach female authors, then hey, more power to them. If the female professors don't want to teach male authors, hey, more power to them. You know, it's always my choice to decide where my educational dollar goes. So why not?
Now, here's something that. Do you have something that makes you go WTF?
I do, but it gets into the political sphere.
That's okay.
It's this predilection that the Republican Party has with punching itself in the balls.
But it's something
I keep coming back to week after week after week because it keeps making me go WTF every time I read about it.
You're referring to the filibuster?
I'm referring to the non-filibuster filibuster and the patient protection.
Okay.
Affordable Care Act. You see what Ted Cruz did in the Senate the other day wasn't technically a filibuster.
Well, it was just
was
a long
no
district, a long oration. Yeah, there was a long oration that just basically delayed the inevitable and the vote,
well,
which
yeah,
was about
exactly.
100 to nothing or something.
Yeah, and he referenced Star Wars and he referenced Dr. Seuss's Green Eggs and Ham and completely missed the point. How you miss the point on green eggs and ham, I just don't understand, though. You made reference to SpongeBob SquarePants, Dude, Where's My Car, a whole bunch of other stuff. But, I mean, if you're ever campaigning against something, this is just an advice to any future orators out there. Referencing green eggs and ham as a parable for people not wanting something is kind of the wrong way to go. Because in Green Eggs and Ham, the author didn't like it until he tried it, and then he loved it. So if you're ever campaigning against something, that's not the way to go. Just a
right.
Thought.
So don't ask people to try it when you don't want them to try it.
Well, exactly. And I mean the other thing is that and this is another thing that drives me nuts is the American media. Fox likes to call everybody else the mainstream media. When they're the most popular media outlet out there. If you're the most popular media outlet out there, that makes you the mainstream media.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Fox
is always going on about, oh, the mainstream media, that MSNBC, CNN, and CBS, and .. No, Fox, you're the most popular. Therefore, if there's a failing in the mainstream media, it's your failing. Duh.
There you go. So it's safe to say then U.S. politics, same old, same old?
Same old, same old. That still makes me go WTF. I haven't found anything in contemporary Canadian politics or the contemporary scene to make me go WTF just in quite the same way.
Well, let me give it a try.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a try. Here's my belly hook. Mayor Rob Ford's popularity climbs to nearly half in latest poll. A telephone poll conducted September 21st and 22nd suggests 49% of Torontonians approve of Ford's performance in Canada's largest city. That made me go, what, WTF?
That surprised the crap out of me.
Really?
No, honestly, his performance as a mayor has been pretty much spot on. His outside the office performance is what makes me go WTF sometimes. But
okay,
what he's trying to do within the city itself is pretty much what he said he was going to do during his election campaign.
But, you know, I would have thought that people are far more shallow than is obviously clear. In my opinion, that's a very how shall I put it, pragmatic approach to thinking about a mayor. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's very pragmatic. It's not something that you would think the voters have. You know, when you see the result of how we vote and who gets in office, it just makes me wonder that people can actually think about performance rather than promises. And in this case, separating a guy's personal life from his political life. And the fact that Toronto voters are able to do that, it totally amazes me and makes me say WTF in a good way. In a good way. Do you know what I mean?
No, I hear you.
You know, but you're right. It isn't a WTF along the same lines. Well, how about this one? The RCMP is moving on with the investigation of the senators in the Senate that may or may not have, pumped up their expenses, A, B, in a illegal fashion, C, bordering on criminal, and D, being criminal. All those options are out there now, apparently the RCMP is investigating full throttle. Doesn't that make the senators say what, WTF?
I would hope it would. Can you give me just a second here, Frank? I need to grab myself a glass of water. I'll be right back.
Okay, I'll tell you what, we'll take a short break while he takes a glass of water.
And
you go ahead and take your glass of water, and I'll carry the conversation momentarily.
Okay.
And you know, what bothers me more than anything about politics, it is when politicians are overtly dishonest, disingenuous, and, to put it bluntly and in a horrible way, actually lie a little too much. That kind of gets me going. I don't know about you folks that are out there, but me, it bothers me to no end that lies seem to get people places nowadays. You know, the truth factor has become, in my opinion, less important. I don't think we as a society any longer know the difference between truth and lies. And worse than that, once we do actually find out whether it's a lie or not, we don't react in a manner that helps close the door. It seems to me that more or less we open the door wider, you know. It's just amazing to see the way life works, and sometimes in the unfair manner in which, life treats people, generally speaking, if you know what I mean.
Sorry, could you repeat that last, Frank?
No, I find it generally, unacceptable on how we seem to be building a society that accepts lies and untruths, leaves the door open and makes that the norm and move on. We don't seem to close the door on certain things that I think as a society we should. Do you know what I mean?
I will agree that there is far too much that's left open these days.
You know, we empower people's misguided behavior by not, you know, making sure that, you know, well, look, ever since the depression that came to our existence recently in the past 10 years, it was clear that there was some, you know, dishonesty from higher up executives, you know, that, you know, manipulated the system so that they could make instant cash without regard to the effect they had on the economy. And then, you know, we went through the process of really paying for, with a loss of jobs, debts, et cetera, in a lot of countries in the world that could afford to go into debt, by the way, you know, give a lot of money to these same people who in turn did the exact same thing with a lot of the money we gave them. And we were unable to close that door. I cite as an example the Nokia chairman has driven the company into the ground, and he refuses to talk down or negotiate down his $25.5 million bonus for the job that he did.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's that kind of stuff. You know, we fire people because there's no work, not because they did anything wrong, but they lose their job. And then you get guys who run a company into a ground and then leave with a bonus.
The other example that comes to mind is Torsten Hines, the head of Crackberry.
Uh-huh.
He saves somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 to $77 million if BlackBerry goes tits up while he's at the helm.
Nice, huh?
Yeah. No, interesting. The fact that they put out an announcement that there was a company that was trying to purchase them to take them private, Fairfax.
Yep. That owns 10% of them already.
$4.7 billion, but the company 10 short years ago was worth somewhere in the neighborhood of north of 80. Like, you look at stuff like, you think to yourself, how does this happen?
Fairfax bought the shares for $17 a share. It's now at $9, and they're thinking of purchasing, hoping to prop up the shares because they don't want it to go down any further, right? Because their initial investment is really,
it's not a bad. That's the thing that drives me nuts is when BlackBerry went public, all of a sudden you hear all these different horror stories about the company, like people are trying to artificially depress the stock.
Why do you think that is?
You hear stories about this, you hear stories about that, you hear about how there's patent infringements, about how sales haven't really gone as well as they've expected when they've actually defeated and met and passed targets. You know, and it's like BlackBerry announces something new. Oh, they should have done this 6 months ago, they should have done that a year ago, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I bet you if you asked them out there, they wouldn't realize that BlackBerry was coming with a new phone called the Q30, which was supposed to go toe-to-toe with the Galaxy Note.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're you know how you've got the full screen version now, the Z10. They're building
which
the
is
Z30
mine. I got that one. That's the one I have.
Screen.
I have the Z10. I'm a BlackBerry owner.
Yep. Well, like I said, with the Galaxy Note, which is supposed to be have an even bigger screen than yours, Frank. It's supposed to be like the Samsung Galaxy phone. So they're bringing that out in the next couple of months. They've got the Q10 and they've got the Q5, which is a downscale and slightly cheaper version of the Q10 that are currently available on the Canadian market.
I heard they canceled a couple of rollouts.
I hadn't heard that, I'll be honest with you.
But regardless, the point is also that the Ontario government is stepping in and ready, willing, and able to help BlackBerry.
Yep.
Because it is an important part of Ontario's, you know, forward-thinking, you know, technology, leading-edge, you know, participation, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember when Waterloo was supposed to be the next Silicon Valley. It was supposed to be the Silicon Valley of the North, the new tech center for Canada, but unfortunately, that kind of seems to have gone by the wayside.
Is there another Silicon Valley of the North? Probably in B.C.?
B.C. or Alberta? One of
is that where you think it is?
Around Edmonton.
Well, they would have the money to invest in such a thing.
Exactly.
You know, that's the thing. So as far as that's concerned, you know, companies still, you know, ones that we rely on here in Canada. I mean, Waterloo, Kitchener-Waterloo says it isn't a big deal. We have the mayor of Kitchener-Waterloo says, you know, our economy is great here. As big as BlackBerry is, it's not that big a deal. You know what I mean? I believe her.
Take up the slack.
Yeah, I believe her. You'll feel it, you know, but it isn't going to take them down.
No.
Which I think is the good news. It isn't going to take them down. So that's all well and good. Now, so you're not. We discussed Mayor Rob Ford. You're not surprised that his popularity ended up where it is. He's doing what people think is important, and I guess that's, you know, for example, now Rob Ford recently, his thing, he's complaining about the $2,500 chairs that were purchased.
See, I hadn't heard about this. What $2,500 chairs?
Rob Ford apologized for city purchase of $2,500 chairs. Toronto's mayor excoriated his own government on talk radio Friday for buying 30 chairs, replicas of the modernist originals in the councillor's lounge. Mayor Rob Ford apologized Friday for the city's decision to spend $75,000 on 30 chairs for the private councillor lounge at City Hall. The $2,500 chairs are replicas of the 1960s designer chairs that used to sit in the lounge. These were created by prominent modernist designer, the late Warren Plattner, and had fallen into disrepair, city officials said. So the purchase of these replicas went through a public procurement process, the hammer that the army buys. But Ford built his political brand lambasting small ticket government waste and extravagance, said he was unaware of the purchase until he read the news in the Toronto Sun. So he didn't know if they were being purchased.
Who signs off on this sort of thing is what I want.
That is what the mayor has done now, right? I got to look further down the story. He said the person that did it hasn't been fired. Questions were asked of Rob Rossini, the officer, financial officer.
Mm-hmm.
An internal August memo obtained. I don't see who they're saying. You know what? Rather than hang them out to dry on such little notice, what I will say is whoever purchased them is going to have some splaining to do.
Yeah, no, I $75,000 for 30 chairs. I probably would have gone to IKEA with that money and saved a whole whack of cash. I mean, I can understand it. It's nice that they have these chairs that were specifically designed for them by Plattner. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, but what about reupholstering them?
Well, it also depends on the kind of disrepair. If they were missing legs or feet or casters or what have you, that can get pricey too.
Well, you don't have the good fortune of looking at the chairs. They have a flat base.
Yeah.
Kind of like a screen mesh attached to that base, to the underside of the seat, with obviously some form of structural metal that will, you know, that is part of that mesh.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? In the picture, that's what it looks like. But, you know, at the end of the day, $2,500 for a chair to sit in the counselor's, I don't know what to say. I'm sure some of these counselors actually have furniture that expensive in their homes.
Dude, I'm in the wrong business.
So it may help them to feel at home. Myself and my wife and I, we don't shop in the. In fact, if a piece of furniture says $1,000 on it, we keep walking.
Unless it's a bed or a mattress or something else
there
you
go.
really need.
Well, there are the exceptions, right? But that's the point. Only exceptions, you know. Like we have dual lazy boys.
So how old were these chairs, Frank?
They were from the 60s.
So they're almost 50 years old.
Yeah, it says here they purchased to replace the original 1960s modernist chairs designed by Warren Plattner, who died in 2006. The
they
implication
haven't bought
is that,
new chairs in 50 years.
So maybe 2,500 a chair is not so bad.
No,
it's not like they're doing it. It's not like they're doing it every year. And if
no,
these
I mean,
last,
it's not like they're going up and dropping $75,000 every year. This is the first time they've bought new chairs in 50 years. How long
well,
are the replicas?
That's what it looks. That's what it looks like. That's what it looks like.
That's what it sounds like based on the news story itself. Unless there's faulty reporting, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well,
I'd
you
love
know, that
to have something last 50 years.
Well, and so you know, if you 1250, 125. That's $125 a year.
$2,500 divided by 50. Yeah, $125 a year sounds about right.
Right? That's not so bad when you look at it that way.
Hold on, $2,500 a chair. Okay.
Yep. Divided by 50 years.
I'm my calculator because I'm suspicious now.
What's 5 into 250? That's 500. No, 50.
My phone is behaving.
Well, I listen.
$50 a year.
Huh?
$50.
Yeah, $50 a year.
Okay,
I recalculated.
Well, but the rolly chair that I have for my desk cost me $50 from IKEA.
And how long is that going to last you?
Probably about 5 years.
So that's $10 a year.
Yeah, so I'm hard on my chairs. But
so they spend five times as much on your chair. They spend...
$50 a year ain't necessarily a bad price.
There you go.
So, you know, Tempest in a teacup.
It's all,
I mean,
it's
one
all
of the things, oh, hold on, you're going to love this one, Frank. You remember the bike lanes on Jarvis?
Okay.
You know how much it cost to paint those?
I don't know.
$80,000.
That's more than the chairs.
No, but here's the interesting thing. You know how much Rob Ford spent to take those lanes out? 3 years later?
Oh, my God. I'm afraid to ask.
$300,000.
So to scratch out the paint?
Yeah, to take the lanes off of Jarvis, to take the bike lanes off of Jarvis because
well, basically
like...
to scratch the paint, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, they didn't move the curbs.
Nope. They didn't move the curbs. They didn't do nothing. It costs four times as much to take those lanes out than to have just left them there. Do you know how much it actually increased commute time? 2 minutes.
So that works out to $400,000 a minute.
Well, when you think about it, $400,000 to put in and take those lanes out.
Okay, $200,000 a minute.
Nah. So, you know, you got to sit there and you got to really, really wonder what this mayor's priorities really are. Now,
you
know he loves to trumpet the fact that Toronto doesn't run a deficit. But,
yeah,
but by law, since
before.
The 1960s, Toronto cannot legally run a deficit. Their budgets have to be balanced. So his claim that Toronto no longer runs a deficit is kind of BS.
Well, it's kind of going to happen anyway, right? No matter who's in power.
No. That's the thing. It can't run a deficit legally.
No, that's what I'm saying. No matter who's in power, it's not going to run a deficit.
Exactly. So the fact that he's claiming that he's killed the deficit in Toronto is a bunch of hooey.
Well, he's implied that he's the originator of it. When in
yeah,
fact
pretty
he's
much.
Ordered, when he's in fact ordered not to have a deficit.
Exactly.
Is that what you? Yeah. Okay. I gotcha.
What he's basically saying is hey, Toronto no longer has a deficit. I'm awesome. While failing to acknowledge the fact that legally Toronto can't run a deficit.
Right. So now we end up in, we have a few minutes left in the program. We've got about 15 minutes. I'll open the subject to whatever you want to discuss. Is there anything we haven't discussed that's scratching at your craw?
At this particular moment, I have to be honest with you, Frank, I'm pretty sanguine about pretty much everything. Life is pretty good for me.
Okay, so, and I think that brings me to my topic that I want to raise. I believe we're in the time of year in between, you know, the end of summer, the relief that summer's over, because for many, summer is a chore. Mostly parents of children that are of school age.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Now the children are in school and the parents who don't have to deal with their kids or deal with them less because they're in school have a bit of a moment where they take a breath and get ready for the next tough part of life. Screaming at us in the distance to be heard shortly and to be reminded us by the end of October, Halloween, Thanksgiving just before that, and Christmas. And we're now in the quiet calm in between summer and winter. We're in the fall. What do you think what kind of winter do you think we're going to have? Especially when authors, as we started this program, refer to the winter of our discontent, almost to imply that winter is automatically a discontented time of the year.
I see a very busy Christmas season coming. I see a lot of new technologies and new toys and lots of people clamoring for new toys. That's part of what I see. That's the economic side. It's going to suck because nobody ever has enough money for Christmas.
Now, I also notice that Christmas for us is going to be interesting, to say the least, with the four kitties who are getting much older now. And unfortunately, it seems it takes more and more to satisfy them. But fortunately for us, we have raised thrifty children who understand fixed incomes and stuff like that. So we're grateful for that. We wish the same for many other families out there because it is a real challenge. A true challenge, because you just hit on the nail on the head. It is so difficult as parents today of teenage children or children who are unprotected by our watchful eye when it comes to sales pitches. Do you think this year has slowed down with advertising? Do you see less advertising wherever you've seen it before that is as intrusive as it has been in the past towards the I want public, meaning young people?
I think the advertising itself has moved.
Where is it?
I may not necessarily be seeing as many billboards or print ads, but I'll open up a browser in my computer and I can't help but see ads that are specifically tailored towards me and my apparent interests.
That are determined, and something that's Google, that Google is very, very, very frowned upon about.
Well, they're very good at it too.
So the purchasing stuff is really important.
Apparently, yes, because if
you
don't buy, the terrorists win.
There you go. Now we have a few minutes left, and we'll just go into it because I have an intro bit of music, but I'm not going to play it because I can't find it, so I won't worry about it. What's his name? The hockey song. Do I have it under H? That would be a great place to have it.
So you say Stompin' Tom under S?
Yeah. Yeah, I got it. It's here. Okay. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to have a quick, after the break, 7-8 minutes of hockey talk. How's that? And maybe
perfect.
Some lacrosse, too.
All right.
Hello out there. We're on the air. It's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps, and the players bump, and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is a good old hockey game. Second period, where players dash, will skate the flash, the home team trails behind. But they grab the puck and go bursting up, and they're down across the line. They storm the crease like bumblebees, they travel like a burning flame. We see them slide the puck inside, it's a 1-1 hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Third period, last game in the playoffs, too. Oh, take me where the hockey players face off down the rink, and the Stanley Cup is all filled up for the champs who win the drink. Now the final flick of a hockey stick and a one gigantic scream. The puck is in, the home team wins the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
So the hockey season is upon us, and being living here in Toronto, there are a lot of people banking on the fact that Toronto will make the playoffs this year. Also, there are a lot of people in Toronto who realize how tough it's going to be to make the playoffs because there'll be two less teams in the Western Division than there are in the East, which simply means that there will be more teams to overcome to make the playoffs. And of course, it is not just Toronto that will be feeling that pinch. The other two Canadian teams in the division will also feel that stress, if you will, Ottawa and Montreal. Ottawa has proven over the years that they've always been better than people predicted them to be. They keep not getting the respect I think they deserve. Montreal has been up and down the past few years, making the playoffs, even dragging Boston, I think, to 7 a few years ago. And that was the year that Boston won the Stanley Cup. So it's going to be an interesting season. As far as you're concerned, Aaron, as far as hockey's concerned, do you see a big difference in the way teams will make the playoffs by virtue of the new divisions?
Well, it's certainly a slight redistribution of the power within the league, most definitely. Having Detroit in the Eastern Division definitely makes things a little bit more interesting. It's always been a tough row to hoe for the Maple Leafs. They've always had what seems to be a dickens of a time making the playoffs. So the fact that there's a new alignment this year, the fact that they seem to feel that I believe a slightly more competitive team than it is. Certainly at least as talented as, if not slightly more talented than last year. The Franson re-signing this week is a good sign for them. The fact that they've got Clarkson sewn up, that's a good deal for them as well. He'll be a great player if he can continue to not do stupid things to get himself suspended. For the Maple Leafs, it's always been a tough road to hoe. What will be interesting, however, is they're going to pan out for the Marlies this year with a new coach. Now that Dallas Eakin is in Dallas, they have Steven Spott coming in to coach. And that should prove to be interesting.
Well, that team has been very successful. They've made it deep into the playoffs for the past couple of years. Dallas Eakin's getting that credit. He worked with a team in Toronto here, the Marlies, that had not as much injuries as losing players to an injury prone team, which Toronto was. His players would disappear regularly off his lineup because the Leafs needed players, and the players that he provided were prepared to play in the National Hockey League. He developed a reputation for training young players in a way that was conducive to being successful in the National Hockey League. And now he moves on to Edmonton, and he's getting much of the same, except he's in the National Hockey League, and he's starting to lose a lot of players due to injuries, and mostly his centerman. He's down to one regular centerman out of four. And the joke I read on the internet was that the reference was that there was an analogy he didn't want to have any more donuts in the dressing room because it reminded people of the holes that they had at center.
Okay. Oh, geez. Why was I thinking Dallas, Frank?
It's okay. It's Edmonton because his name's Dallas. You would think he would go to Dallas.
It's the hinterland of hockey.
There you go. Well, Edmonton's not bad either. It doesn't matter. That I wasn't even going to mention it, but since you mentioned it, yeah, it is Edmonton, and it is he is having a problem with injuries, you know, and with their salaries that they're putting out there, they're relying very heavily on you know, the raising of the salary cap, you know, because they've got some players that might be wanting like contracts of the other players who just signed. So it's going to be interesting for Edmonton. They look like a good team, and if the injuries you know, aren't fatal, if you will, they will be competing very highly in their division, and they can. It's, you know, they have a lot of teams in that division that are mediocre, not many that are lousy, but a lot of mediocre teams. So it just means that they can't start slow because they'll have room to make up with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion. The other division, that's the Chicago division, of course, that I'm referring to. The other division, it's going to be an interesting season. I do believe that with Detroit moving into this division, it is one team that's definitely better than Toronto coming into the division. So that alone makes it harder for them to make the playoffs. Where they were, you know, up against Montreal and Boston before, last year, for example,
mm-hmm.
You know, they've got now the Islanders are an improved team, you know, because we're obviously talking about the Leafs as a wild card. We're not talking about them finishing first, second, or third.
No, they are definitely going to be the wild card sort of thing.
So that's who they're up against, right? Montreal, the Islanders, the Rangers, because the top three in the other division, and Philadelphia is much improved. I think that as much as people are poo-pooing their goalies this year, I'm not. I think their goaltending is much better this year. It's better than it's been in a while, and they, you know, they're a good team. I think they are a good team, and they'll be hungry. They'll come back very strong, as I said. The Islanders, and the first three will be Pittsburgh. Oh man, I got to look at the division. I'm having trouble. I'm having a brain lock on the teams in the division.
It's okay. It happens to me, too. Dallas and Edmonton.
That's all right. Yeah. And they're the Metropolitan Division.
Is that what they're calling them? Really?
Yeah.
I will be interested in seeing the New York Islanders move to Brooklyn.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Okay. So you got Pittsburgh, Washington, Philadelphia, the Rangers, Islanders, New Jersey, and you know, those teams alone, you got four teams there that will probably make the playoffs for sure.
Yep.
Which leaves you know, the Leafs in the cold if they can't be the top, you know, one of those top wild card teams. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be an interesting season, to say the least. Aaron, thanks for joining me tonight.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
On Way to Go Fridays. We'll see you again next week.
Yes,
have a great one, my man.
You too.
All right. You've been listening to Candid Frank Live. Thanks for tuning in. We hope to hear from you Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. In the coming future, I'll be making some changes, serious changes, but changes nonetheless. I hope to have you continue following us on the show when we do make those changes. But for now, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you again next week. This has been Candid Frank Live on Blog Talk Radio, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.